As we return to the book of Genesis, we return to the life of Abram, which, to my mind, as I read these chapters one after another, it seems that Abram's life is lurching from one crisis to another, and he is the man of faith. He's the father of the faithful. Last time we saw there was a famine in the land, and because of the famine, Abram went down into Egypt, which in the Bible is very often a sign of people moving out of the will of God. So he has gone down into Egypt. When he goes down into Egypt, he's afraid. He's afraid that people will, that the Pharaoh will see his beautiful wife, and that the Pharaoh will take his beautiful wife into the harem of the Pharaoh. So Abram tells a lie and says she is his sister, and his wife ends up in the harem anyway. So he has gone into this place out of the will of God. He has lost his wife, and he has told a lie along the way. And it just seems to be that crisis after crisis after crisis is hitting the life of Abraham. And now as we move into chapter 13, we have another crisis, where his herdsmen get into a row with his nephew's herdsmen. And it seems that the battle between these two sets of herdsmen is quite intense, so much so that there's a division in the family and arrangements need to be made in order to pour oil in troubled waters. So that's the way in which his life has been going. And it shows us that the life of faith isn't always a rose garden or a Sunday school picnic. The text is honest. The text is showing us that following the Lord and being a faithful man or woman of God does not mean that your life will always work out in exactly the way you want it to work out. Often there will be times when you really have to walk by faith and not by sight. And that is very much this man, Abram. And we see God at work in his life in different ways. But let me just, first of all, this morning talk about, and these will come up on the screen, how his life does get back on track again. And that's the first 7 verses here of Genesis chapter 13. As I've said, going down into Egypt, in Bible terms, is very often a symbol of going out of the will of God. So to come back up out of Egypt again is a symbol of your life getting back on track with God again. And Abram is doing that. And this is a reminder to us as well that when we are seeking to walk the spiritual life and to follow the Lord, there will be times in our lives when we do step out of the will of God, or we do find ourselves in a place that we know we shouldn't be in. And we're not to at that point just to write ourselves off and say, well, that's me, I'm finished. We come back to the Lord again. We seek the Lord again. And we find that place of forgiveness and getting our walk with the Lord back up and running again. Somebody has said God isn't the God of the second chance. He's the God of the 72nd chance and the 172nd chance. He is the God who, when his people repent and come back to him, he restores them and puts them back again into right relationship. And so Abram, as he leaves Egypt behind, he leaves behind this place, and like every Christian, every follower of the Lord, every believer in the Lord, there will be these times when we do have to turn back to the Lord. Just because you've turned your back on the world once to get saved is a once, yes, but then there has to be a second and a third and a fourth. Throughout the believer's life, there will come times when you have to turn your back on the world, and the world which seeks to suck you back into it again. You will have to turn your back on it over and over and over and over and over again. And for Abram here, we're told that he goes up from Egypt in verse 1, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the Negev, into the desert. Because now that Abram is getting his life back on track again, Abram is leaving behind the lap of luxury in Egypt, because Abram can see that being in the desert with the sand with God is better than being in the lap of luxury without God. And so he has turned his back on Egypt, and now he is back into this desert place, initially the Negev, before then he travels on. And I want you just to note in verse 2, he's very rich, we're told, in livestock and in silver and in gold. God has blessed him materially. It's not wrong to be blessed materially. It is wrong if it becomes your God. But the text is keen to tell us that this man has been enriched, and as he travels in verse 3, he journeys on to the place where his tent had been at the beginning with Bethel and Ai, and there he calls upon the name of the Lord. And there's the sign he's getting back with the Lord. He is now calling upon the name of the Lord again. I don't think he called upon the name of the Lord in Egypt, except for prayers that were like, get me out of this, Lord. But now he's back calling upon the name of the Lord, and the sense is of his spiritual life back on track again. The psalmist says, taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. And Abraham is now worshiping the Lord again. He is praying to the Lord again. He's walking with the Lord again. There's the satisfaction, the spiritual satisfaction of being right with God and knowing the smile of God upon your life. I wonder, do you know the smile of God upon your life today? Or is your life a life that makes God frown? A life that as God looks at it, God wonders over the grace that is extended to you over and over and over again, so many ways, and yet still, you don't want to know. Abram was not like that. Abram turned to the Lord. He turned over and over and over again, and now he's got his life back on track. But secondly, there's a cloud on the horizon. We're told in verse 5, and Lot, who's his nephew, went with Abram. Also, Lot had flocks and herds and tents, so that the land could not support both of them dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they could not dwell together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. At that time, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were dwelling in the land. And that little detail's added for a reason. The Canaanites and the Perizzites were the locals, the unbelievers. And they were watching. They were watching Abram, this father of the faithful, this friend of God. And in his family, there's a row going on. That's why we're told this little detail. Because the world is watching us, isn't it? If we make a profession of faith, if we claim to be Christians, the world is watching. Somebody has said, we should be walking Bibles. Some of us are walking libels. Because our lives are not what they ought to be, even though we claim to be followers of the Lord. And here it's not that Abram has done anything wrong, but the herdsmen are arguing. And in a nutshell, the problem is this: too many animals, too little grass. And you can imagine the herdsmen arguing over grazing rights. And men getting to an area and starting their animals grazing, and others arriving and saying, hey, that's meant to be our area this time. And this row was going on between the herdsmen. And the unbelievers were lapping it up, no doubt. The talk of the country, how things have changed from the lovely settled atmosphere at the start. But here there's trouble in the family. In one of her books, the missionary Elizabeth Elliot wrote the following words. I realize, she said, that the deepest spiritual lessons are not learned by God letting us have our way in the end, but by his making us wait, bearing with us in love and patience until we are able to honestly pray what he taught his disciples to pray, thy will be done. And there's a very real sense here for Abram that he is having to learn that deep spiritual lesson. This is just another test. This is just another trial. This is now pressure building up within the family to say to the Lord, thy will be done. That he would accept that God's way, this is not God's way. This is not what Abram would have wanted. But he's having to accept that God's way is the best way, and he's having to address it, and he's having to find at the center of this next crisis an answer. What is the Lord's will here? What is the Lord's way? And this cloud on the horizon once again has created a time for Abram to say, what does the Lord want me to do? I wonder, whenever times of crisis come into our lives, those of us who call ourselves believers today and followers of Jesus Christ, how do we respond? When the crisis comes, do we address it in faith? Do we see it as come from the Lord? Or do we just throw our hands up and say, why me? Why has this always happened to me? I'm preaching to myself here as much as to anybody else. And Abram, it seems to me this trouble has arisen between the herdsmen, his herdsmen, and his nephew's herdsmen, and he's having to address this in faith, to walk by faith and not by sight. That takes me on thirdly today to the generosity of spirit that Abram displays. For he acts. He doesn't just pray. He doesn't just leave it to the Lord. He acts. He does something. And we're told in verse 8, he said to Lot, his nephew, let there be no strife between you and me and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen, we're family. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you take the right, I'll go to the left. Notice the generosity. Abram is the senior man. Abram had all the rights. He could have given orders to Lot. He could have told Lot which ground he was getting. But instead, he shows a generosity to Lot, and he says, okay, Lot, you choose. If you go left, I'll go right. If you go right, I'll go left. Just you choose. I'm throwing it over to you. And when I was preparing this, I couldn't help but wonder, is Abram treating his nephew so generously because Abram has been treated so generously by God? Abram didn't deserve to be called by God and to receive these gracious promises. He didn't deserve that. So God had treated him graciously. And if God has treated him graciously, now he's going to treat his nephew graciously. And so he holds out this offer to him, probably knowing full well that Lot would pick the best grazing ground for himself. Lot was one of those people, I remember when I was a child, if I took too much for dinner and had to leave things uneaten, my father would have said to me, you see, your eyes are bigger than your belly. Lot was an eyes bigger than his belly man. Lot saw. Lot took. Lot was careless about moving so close to the wicked cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, which were told in verse 13, the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners before the Lord. But hey, who cares? That's the best ground. That's where I want to go, and that's where I'm going to go. That was Lot. Notice the contrast between the uncle and the nephew. The uncle is generous, gracious, giving Lot the choice, and Lot, it's all about Lot. And this illustration for us here is, as Lot moves his tent, we're told, as far as Sodom, a warning. And we're going to see this when we come back to the story of Lot later on in the book of Genesis. Lot was careless about moving so close to the wicked city of Sodom. He shouldn't have gone anywhere near it. But for Lot, it's where the nightlife was. For Lot, it's where the money was to be made. For Lot, it was where his ambition could be fulfilled, because Lot eventually ends up as one of the political leaders in the city. For Lot, it was all about Lot. He was a believer. But hey, who wanted to keep on living in a tent in a desert when the bright lights, the neon lights of Sodom and Gomorrah were shining. And do you know how many Christians, how many believers are just like Lot? How easy is it for any Christian to start acting like Lot? Lot put himself before the Lord. Lot put his ambitions before the Lord. Lot put his work before the Lord. Lot put his leisure time before the Lord. He knew what he wanted. He didn't care about God's standards, God's morality, God's ways. It was all about Lot. And Lot, yes, ends up as a man saved by the skin of his teeth, but his wife was lost. His daughters, almost unimaginable what they do. And this verse is here for a reason to warn us that Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent towards Sodom. When you play with fire, you get burned. And when you put your work before the Lord and your family loses out, you put your leisure before the Lord, you just turn into kind of an entertainment freak. You put your ambition before the Lord, your life just becomes driven by other gods. And Lot's here for a warning. He moved his tent as far as Sodom. Later on in the book, he's in Sodom. Here he's kind of just looking at it. He's smelling it. And he likes what he smells. He likes what he sees. And so he edges closer. Maybe I'm speaking to someone today and you've been edging closer to the world. Edging closer to some place or some people or some pursuit that's not of the Lord. This was not God's will for Lot to do this, but Lot just went with his own carnal appetites. And what a contrast to Abram. Abram, verse 12, settled in the land of Canaan. He was content wherever he was. Lot settled in the world, but Abram settled wherever, as long as the Lord was with him. That was all that mattered. And that's why he demonstrated such a generosity of spirit. I hear the words of the Apostle Paul in Philippians 4, where he says, I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being content, whether facing plenty or hunger, abundance or need. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength. As long as he had Jesus, didn't matter what else he didn't have. As long as he had Jesus. And that's Abram, as long as he has the Lord. Well, the grazing rights can go. Lot and his herdsmen can go. As long as I have the Lord, that's all I need. And that's why the final thing to draw out of this today is how the life of faith is just in verse 14, how Abram now becomes a man living on the promises of God. He has lost out in this world's terms, but he's a millionaire, spiritually speaking, with the Lord. In fact, he's a billionaire. Look at verse 14. The Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northwards and southwards and eastwards and westwards, for all the land that you see I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also can be counted. Arise, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I will give it to you. Notice the generosity of God. This explains the generosity of Abram. He has been treated generously. And now God just gives him blessing after blessing after blessing. Look at the land, north, south, east, and west. It's yours. Your offspring are going to be as the dust of the earth. That's why I say Abram was a spiritual billionaire. Correcting myself, he wasn't a spiritual millionaire. He was a spiritual billionaire. Because his family going to count as the dust of the ground. There's going to be so many of them. Perhaps he felt a little sore at losing such good ground for grazing. But God's promises more than compensated for what he was losing. And you know, when we lose out for God, and I believe Abraham did lose out here, he certainly lost out on good ground for grazing his animals. But I believe that when we lose out for God, God always repays us in abundance. Let me tell you about a phone call I had a few weeks ago. A friend of mine phoned, and he was congratulating me on the election as moderator. And as he always does when he phones me, he said as he ended the call, "I'm going to pray." And he prayed with me on the phone. Lives a long way away. And in the middle of the prayer, he started to pray for this congregation. And he said in the prayer, if I could remember more or less what he said, "Lord, you remember how whenever Robert Murray McShane left the congregation of St. Peter's to go to the Holy Land for a year and a half to see the sights, when he was away for that year and a half, revival broke out in St. Peter's in Dundee." And he prayed this, "Lord, when Richard's away for his year as moderator, maybe we'll even see revival in Drumrea." And you know, isn't that what's going on here with Abraham? He's lost out materially, physically, but God more than blesses him spiritually. God is always able to do more than anything we ask or imagine. "See if I will not open the floodgates of heaven and pour out a blessing such as there is not room enough to contain it," says God. And our spiritual health is our wealth. That's our wealth. We can have money in the bank with lots of figures and large bank balances and all of that sort of stuff. It's our spiritual wealth that is our health. And God gives Abraham land, he gives him lives, he gives him blessing after blessing after blessing. And it's not just Jews, it's Gentiles. The numbers are into the millions as God's mercy is extended to many others who come to share the same faith as Abraham. And the chapter ends, verse 18, with Abraham moving his tent and coming and settling by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron. And there he built an altar to the Lord. He's back building an altar to the Lord, back sacrificing to the Lord, back praying to the Lord, back calling upon the name of the Lord. This is the life of faith. He can't get enough of the Lord. He can't give enough to the Lord. He loves the Lord. Nothing is too much for the Lord. Friends, this is the life of faith displayed here. May God enable us to live the life of faith. And if we're not believers today, to say, "Lord, come into my life, Lord. I want to live this life. This is the glorious life where we live on the promises of God, not on the broken promises of politicians or the broken promises of employers or the broken promises of family who promised us many things and they've never come through, Lord. But your promises are true. Your promises are effective. Your promises never fail. And your promises are all yes and amen in Jesus Christ. Lord, may I live on those promises and prove you the living and true God." Let's pray.